From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
We can't say that we're going to move jobs from one community in the state to another and declare victory for job growth. I mean, we just can't ignore the fact that under that proposal, jobs would be moving away from the place in the state with the highest unemployment.
I consider Mike Madigan's reaction proof positive that we're doing our jobs and doing our jobs well, because if we weren't, he wouldn't be bothering with us.
And that is former TV reporter Andy Shaw, who heads the Better Government Association, reacting to criticism from House Speaker Michael Madigan. And before that, State Senator Andy Menar, a Central Illinois Democrat, on his latest proposal to attach some conditions to potential tax breaks for Archer Daniels Midland. Those will be a couple of the topics we talk about on State Week. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS Illinois Public Radio, Brian Mackey, State House Reporter for WUIS IPR, and our guest today, Ray Long of the Chicago Tribune. Ray, thanks for stopping by the show today.
Good to be here, Bill. Thank you.
And we will be getting into lots of politics and issues, but starting off just kind of on an oddball topic this week, Andy Shaw draws the ire of House Speaker Michael Madigan. That happened probably many times when he was a reporter. Now he's with the Better Government Association. They did a joint report over the weekend with the Chicago Sun-Times, and in that report, they pointed out that some of Madigan's people circulating petitions for the speaker were government employees. And then what was uncharacteristic, I thought, was that the House Speaker sent a letter out to Democratic lawmakers and the party's State Central Committee criticizing Andy Shaw. And Andy, being who he is, I think probably relishes the publicity and says, well, that was proof positive right there that he's making a difference. It just seems kind of crazy that the House Speaker went this public in a way to attack the BGA. What do you think's behind that?
Well, I think that Mike Madigan will show a tendency to see what the story says and then come out and say what he wants to say about it. You notice that the spokesman was not quoted as thoroughly in the story as Madigan was afterwards. It's one of these things where the story was a fair story, and that it's fair to examine the House Speaker of the state of Illinois and how he handles his precinct workers, and to match them up as to whether or not they are on government payrolls. I think the investigation showed there were like 29 out of 30 had been or are on government payrolls. That is not a surprise in itself, but sometimes it's just worth doing a story to show the obvious so that people know indeed what is happening out there. I am somewhat surprised by the speaker's response, but he has made some harsh remarks about various reports before, and you know he can tee off and people will listen. I do think that Andy Shaw's reaction was pure Andy Shaw, and that he is not going to just take a shot and quiet down.
And in the letter that Madigan sent out, he was saying that like Shaw was trying to become a kingmaker in Illinois politics and tarnish Democratic candidates. What did he mean by that?
Well, I think that a lot of the reporting that the BGA has done over the past year or two, or during Andy Shaw's term there, has been aimed at showing some of the things that Democrats do in Illinois, and some of the things that are harsh, that open themselves up to harsh criticism, open the Democrats up to harsh criticism. Also, I think that Andy Shaw more or less endorsed Forrest Claypool in the race for assessor against Joe Berrios, the Cook County Party chairman. That is something that a lot of Democrats will like to try to say, well, he may have gone past his nonprofit status there by pushing the envelope on that type of thing. But, this is sniping back and forth when it comes down to a bottom line. This is a report that's rolled out, and now there's some firing back and forth.
Sniping back and forth between two big personalities and very different personalities. Andy Shaw loves being in front of the camera. Madigan, not so much, and his clearly decides and is far more calculated in his decision. So, yes, I think it was a surprise because it has changed the storyline from one that would have faded because, again, it isn't necessarily surprising about this nexus between the politics and government side of things. But nonetheless, I think is significant. Those are the sort of stories that kind of that really show, I think, how politics and government are in many ways synonyms in Illinois. You're seeing the BGA under Shaw's leadership very much being more out in front. He is the BGA has been around for a while, not to say that it hasn't been, but he's taking it in a different direction. Former reporter using his reporting skills, and I think that Madigan was getting to that. There have been some questions about just the intersection between, okay, if it's an organization that's lobbying and, you know, testifying in front of committees and then nonetheless getting involved in journalism and producing stories, how does that all work out? So that's kind of a side Media Matters perspective of this as well.
And you both have raised the point that it is worth pointing out that this does go on. And then here we are in Springfield, Illinois, where almost anybody that's running for office in the region likely has many state employees out there doing it, circulating petitions. So you get a little desensitized in a situation where it is good to point that out. But
I would say it's not just in Springfield, Illinois.
Oh, no.
I think it's all across the state. And to me, this is the kind of story that TV stations routinely do, telling you not to put lit candles on your Christmas tree at Christmas time. It's like, well, of course not. Or a story saying that, well, you know, it may snow today, so you better bundle up the kids. You're stating the obvious. And maybe for people who don't pay any attention to politics and aren't aware of the obvious, maybe it's helpful. To me, what made the story interesting was Madigan's over-the-top reaction. So you say to yourself, why did Madigan go out of his way to give Andy Shaw the kind of publicity that Andy can only dream about? did Madigan lose control of himself, which would be remarkable? I mean, the rest of us mortals lose control of ourselves all the time, but Mike Madigan has this reputation of being totally in control 100% of the time, all the time. And so did he lose it? Wow,
well, that's not a flippant remark. I mean, it's a written letter.
Even the language in there suggesting mm-hmm. that the BGA is out to impugn the Democratic Party. No, I mean, you look at who funds the BGA, and maybe most of them are big political players, a lot of them being Republicans, but they also give big money to the Democrats. So, yeah, it's kind of the top dogs.
Well, maybe it's an attempt to send a signal not to be funding the BGA.
Well, I looked at it more that Madigan took it personally as an attack, somehow impugning the integrity of his team, his campaign workers, basically his crew. And so he's defending his guys, if you will. And that's why he did something that I found to be very uncharacteristic of Mike Madigan.
Well, and this is not the first time we've had this conversation this year about the speaker doing something that we thought was uncharacteristic. I mean, remember we had after his daughter decided not to run for governor, and there were some questions. She had indicated, well, if the speaker was going to remain speaker, I wasn't going to. And he said she knew I was going to be speaker, kind of putting that, what, you know, whatever family discussions happen, kind of putting them into the public in a small way, but in a way that a lot of people who are close observers of the speaker found unusual. And then there was also that bizarre Chicago TV report where he hid out in his state office for a couple hours while Chicago TV cameras were outside, or a camera was outside kind of stalking him. Just kind of there have been some unusual happenings this year with the speaker having a little bit more high-profile role than I think he's used to and than he likes.
He took some shots, written shots against the union a while back, too, when our union efforts with regard to the pensions. And I believe he was saying, you know, get serious and get down to business here. But it was a little more charged than usual.
Well, it is one I certainly have found interesting. Now, I wasn't so surprised, for instance, on the one where his car was pulling away, because the usual way of dealing with it is he will just not talk to you if he feels he's been slighted or something. So that's just what I find unusual about it. This is State Week. Just ahead, we'll be talking about a new proposal regarding Archer Daniels Midland.
Support for State Week in Review comes from the Illinois State Bar Association, whose activities include proposing and shaping legislation, educating the public, and supporting the courts and the rule of law. Information at IllinoisLawyerFinder.com.
Our panel on State Week, Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, Amanda Venicky, and the Chicago Tribune's Ray Long. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. A few weeks back, Archer Daniels Midland, headquartered in Decatur, announced it would be moving its top corporate-level jobs out of Decatur, the 100 or so jobs, and relocating that office, still leaving much of its operation in Decatur, Illinois. Since then, there has been talk about tax breaks for Archer Daniels Midland to stay in Illinois, as they have possibly an eye on Chicago. But also now, there is a legislative proposal out there that if they're going to get tax breaks, they better bring some jobs back into a struggling town in Illinois, being Decatur. State House, how about an update on what this latest proposal is?
Well, the basic proposal is bring 100 jobs to Decatur over the next 5 years if you want to get some assistance from the state. It was negotiated in part by Andy Menar, the state senator here from central Illinois, whose district includes Decatur. He has been trying to make the point that we don't want to lose jobs in Decatur, and ADM has been trying to make the point that they'd like some help. They've asked for as much as $24 million over, 10 years or 20 years. I'm slipping on the specific there, but the point is that
it was a relatively small amount of money. I mean, people were kind of surprised, and ADM's response was, "Well, we're in a very tight margin business, and we operate on small levels of profit, and so they're fighting for every dollar."
Yeah, and they want to move to Chicago, and they'll have a few more expenses there too. So they in Chicago, of course, wants a big business up there at a world headquarters. You know, they've got Boeing, and they'd like to claim some other crown jewels. And ADM already has a top officer buying a house in Chicago. So the hand is kind of tipped here where they look like they're looking strongly. But they've made these kinds of threats of, like, moving elsewhere, maybe Indianapolis or St. Louis, et cetera.
Well, and where this is different, I mean, first of all, you have – it, as Illinois often gets into offering tax incentives, tax credits, working with companies to try and locate here versus there, what have you. But you don't have competition in the state itself. And so that has long been Senator Menar's contention that, hey, wait, what is Illinois doing giving money to a company to take jobs from one area to give them to another? And so I think that there's that. There's also just the notion of, are legislators going to go forward and give companies money when they are making cuts elsewhere. And this is something that we saw previously during CME and Sears when legislators did end up getting a package. At that time, though, it was coupled with giving more an earned income tax credit, increasing the amount that basically low-income people can take this credit for themselves. So there was seen as some sort of common person offset. I'm not sure if this goes far enough in terms of that, or legislators facing election going to look like they're giving handouts to companies. And then I think the kind of the third offshoot that makes this particularly interesting is just in general. Obviously, everywhere in the state and in the nation are trying to revitalize after the recession and such, and it's jobs, jobs, jobs. But it is a very different situation in the city of Chicago versus a lot of other places. You look at Chicago and the suburbs and how they're doing versus downstate Illinois. There are a lot of communities that are very much struggling, Decatur being one of them. And I think that that is going to – it's a kind of continued divide that we see play out in a lot of ways in state politics and in legislation, where you're – you know, hear calls from time to time, hey, let Chicago secede. It should be its own state. How about southern Illinois leaves? Let's the rest of you go off do your thing. I mean, there's very much a tension, and that – I think is going to exacerbate in time as you look at the economy playing out, and this is really an interesting tip of the iceberg of that.
So, are Senator, you saying that a regional divide, economic divide, is going to, will it have any political role in the debate over this, Amanda?
Oh, of course it will. When you're looking at tax incentives and if you're going to take a hit by, again, giving a company a credit when you're not doing anything for an average voter, how does that look? So legislators, in order to vote for it, want to look at something for themselves. How is this going to play out at their home base? So there's a larger negotiation there that will take place. And that's where you see, for example, Senator Menard trying to do this, saying, you know, this is for central Illinois. But there have to be part of negotiations. But I think it goes beyond just the vote. It's also going to be some hard decisions for policymakers, for departments, and kind of tough things for Illinois to look at going forward.
Brian Mackey.
Well, and I was just going to say, you know, one person's corporate tax incentive is another person's corporate tax loophole, mm-hmm. or corporate tax giveaway. And this is something we've heard consistently in the pension debate from the union, saying, why are we talking about going after people who have worked for the state, you know, or teachers, prison guards, whatever they may be, going after their pensions, reducing their benefits, while at the same time we're giving handouts to company like Sears and CME a few years ago, looking at ADM we're talking about now, Office Max and Office Depot, which are planning to merge. They're also looking for corporate tax breaks. There are other ones out there. The unions, I think, are making the point, why are we doing this at a time when we're in such dire straits that we have to take apart employees' pensions?
Well, and of course, and that's where you have Governor Pat Quinn not having signed on to this at all, saying that he doesn't believe it's a discussion Illinois should be having until the pension issue is resolved. And we've talked about that previously in terms of what does that mean for things. I think the conventional wisdom is that it doesn't necessarily mean all that much, because it's not like the governor has a reputation for being intimately involved in legislative negotiations anyway. The General Assembly kind of does what it does and then sends it to him in often cases. That's not always the case, but generally so. That said, his public statements could make it harder for legislators to give, you know, kind of political cover if the governor ends up bashing this more. He is on, I think, somewhat careful ground. However, it appears, again, this whole executive buying a condo in Chicago, like ADM has all but made up its mind and is moving to the city. That said, if that were to change, that could look bad and blame may fall on Governor Pat Quinn. It could be that he won't necessarily veto it and he just won't act on it. And eventually, if the legislature does get this done during the veto session or later in the year, perhaps, it could be, you know, sent to the governor's desk, and if he doesn't do anything to it, it would just slide into law.
It occurs to me that the, as I understand it, the type of credit that ADM is asking for, in essence, would be to allow the company to keep for itself the money it withholds in state income taxes from the workers' paychecks. And so then you have to ask yourself, is ADM bluffing or not? If we say no, are they going to relocate their international headquarters to Minneapolis or Indianapolis or St. Louis. And if that's the case, they take not only those salaries, they also take whatever spending those employees might do on which they would pay sales tax. They take whatever property taxes might be paid, all the other taxes. And so if you in your mind you think ADM's not going to go anywhere anyway, so no, we're not going to give them any type of tax credit. On the other hand, if you think there's a real chance that they may move their international headquarters, they've already said they're keeping their North American headquarters in Decatur, then you say, okay, so we don't get the income tax, but on the other hand, we keep all these other taxes that would be attendant to these jobs remaining within the state of Illinois. To me, that's kind of the decision that you have to make. And I found it interesting that ADM also agreed to this proposal that was negotiated with Senator Menard, and they've said, yes, we will add additional jobs in Decatur to make up for the ones that we would move to Chicago.
Moving those jobs, I was just say, probably not going to be the level of the top CEOs.
Oh,
and
no,
CFOs
no.
And
I mean,
else.
They're not going to put in a whole second level of the, you know, the big shots at the top. But on the other hand, if you're someone in Decatur who's unemployed, chances are your odds of being hired as a CEO by some multinational corporation are pretty slim anyway. But on the other hand, if there were a job in production at ADM, you'd be very glad to have it.
It makes it a lot more palatable. And, Charlie, I think, I mean, you're right, that's the decision, but this is politics. And so it's also how it appears publicly. And so that goes into any decision. Yes, do you fear your ADM is going to leave, or do you think it's going to stay no matter what? And a calculation of a vote based on that. But it's also a calculation of a vote based on how does this look? How is this perceived to an average person? And I do think that this new version negotiated by Senator Menard does make it more palatable. And, again, particularly for those from downstate, for example.
As we talk about issues that could come up before Illinois lawmakers next week when they return for the final week of the fall session, what other issues do you guys see as potentials in the coming week, Ray Long?
Well, what we have coming up here are the possibilities of a vote on gay marriage. As we know, in February, on February 14th, Valentine's Day, the Senate passed a gay marriage bill in Illinois. It's been sitting in the House. It languished in the spring session. They decided not to call a vote. Now there's pressure building to call a vote here in the second week of the veto session. There may be some people coming along now who are prepared to throw their vote into the mix and throw their vote in favor of gay marriage. That could come up. Again, it's going to be a close call. I'm sure they're not going to call it unless they think they are close. It might be one of those game time decisions, and they may throw it up there, even if they're only close, in hopes that somebody will put it over the top. The next thing we have is Mayor Emanuel and Cook County State's Attorney Anita Alvarez are pushing a three-year minimum for certain gun crimes, illegal use of weapons, three-year minimum in prison, 85% time served. That's a tough one to pass here because Illinois has a strong NRA and gun rights community overall. There are negotiations going on, but it's going to be difficult to do that in the shadow of the concealed weapons law that just came into place. It is going to be a high hill to climb. And then finally, what we've got here is the question of whether we will have pensions resolved in this session. I would say that they're as close as they've been, maybe ever been, on resolving it, but they still need to look at the numbers closely. They still may be looking for more reviews, and they still might not have the will to do it while they're still out passing petitions to get on the ballot in March.
I'll add that there are a couple of kind of offshoots that I think we could see happen, given that there was such little action, the first week of veto session, and that so much is up in the air for the second week, we could see kind of, again, what I would say are either distractor issues or just things that need to get done or could be in place. There's, for example, an effort to revise Illinois' renewable portfolio standard, basically the requirements of how many renewables need to be purchased and used when you look at energy markets. And then there's some potential for revisions to the election code, those sort of things. There's also set to be a hearing on how the lottery, which has been somewhat privatized, there's a private manager running it, and then also the state still owns it and controls it, and some questions there in terms of Director Michael Jones and some actions he's taken. So there's going to be a hearing on that. Those are kind of some of the issues that we may see be done while the rest of it is still in limbo.
Well, time to go for notes from the field, and we'll start with Brian Mackey.
Just want to mention that Illinois Supreme Court has a new Chief Justice as of this week. It's Justice Rita Garman of Danville. She is has been a judge since, I believe, 1974. She's actually the second longest serving judge in the state of Illinois, and she's also the second woman to head not only the Illinois Supreme Court as Chief Justice, but the second woman to head any branch of government in Illinois.
The first time Central Illinois had a chief judge since Ben Miller, I think. One of the things that I was looking at as a note on the field, Bill, was Bruce Rauner was down at the Sangamo Club for one of the Republican groups here in town last week. He is getting a little more agile on the stump. He is looking a little bit more like a candidate, and he's starting to answer a few more questions. It's possible that some of the pollsters or some of his advisors have suggested that you've got to act more congenial, or maybe give voters an idea of what you stand for and not just how much money you have.
Amanda Vinicky.
Well, effective as of this taping, there is nationwide, but including in Illinois, of course, and an impact in this state, a cut to food stamps that was part of the 2009 kind of economic recovery. But it will be remain to be seen what sort of effect that has here in this state.
And Charlie Wheeler.
Well, there was an audit that came out this week from Auditor General Bill Howland that was very critical of the Department of Central Management Services in its role as the keeper of the records of how much property the state owns, land and buildings. And it found out that the CMS's central inventory only has a fraction of the state's actual holdings. For example, the list is so sloppy that only one of the nine public universities in the state has anything on there, and that's the University of Illinois Chicago, and it lists two properties only. It lists an office building at Roosevelt and Ashland and a classroom library building on West Taylor Street. It also omits 33 state parks, and the department's response is, well, we have all the records, but they're not all in the central database. It would be too expensive to try and put them all into the central depository. And incidentally, this is the same criticism that was made the last time that Howland, under directions from the legislature, took a look at this roughly 10 years ago.
That's our time for this edition of State Week. Thanks to Ray Long of the Chicago Tribune for joining us. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org, or if using a desktop or laptop, find it on iTunes by searching for State Week in Review. Production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.